Should we?
Representative Davis, you go out there, I'll take a picture.
Yeah, there you go.
House Committee on Revenue will come to order.
And the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. We're meeting jointly today to receive the Highway Cost Allocation Study, and we're fortunate that Mazen Malik from Legislative Revenue Office is here to kick us off. Lead the way and tell us who's here besides the skateboarders to help us understand this.
Afternoon to the leading members of the Transportation and Economic Development. I got this one right. And Chair Bailey, members of the Committee on Revenue. For the record, my name is Mazen Malik. I'm with the Legislative Revenue Office. And about every session around this time, we bring you a number of studies, but mainly the Highway Cost Allocation Study. And the Highway Cost Allocation Study, we think of it as the representation of the equity clause, if you will, in the Oregon Constitution when it comes to transportation. The Oregon Constitution requires that there is an equity between the different classes of vehicles on who pays what, and in also the statutes, it specifies that both the transportation committees and the revenue committee are the committees entitled to get these presentations, and of course, if need be, to take action on that. So today we bring you a few people to make that presentation. First we have from the Office of Economic Analysis, Josh Leonard, and also Tom Pitowski from NERC. He will say exactly what NERC is, but it's an appropriate name for the kind of work they do.
I've heard him say before that it's one letter off from nerd. So
that's why it's appropriate.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And they would. Tom is the consultant for DAS in this process in managing the Highway Cost Allocation Study. And after that, we would bring three members of the study review team to address you in the process of how that study has been done. And then we would go with Carl Batten from Seco Northwest to give you the quick presentation on the study results. Right after that, we would have the flat fee study, which is equally well, slightly connected to the Highway Cost Allocation Study, but it's on the flat fee option. And then a quick report on the House Bill 2001, or what we call GTA Revenue Report. This is a quarterly report required by statute on how the GTA House Bill 2001 has been coming when it comes to revenue outcomes.
So who's first?
Tom and Josh.
Thank you very much. And while they're getting settled, please come forward. Representative Davis, do you want to introduce your guest?
Thank you, Chair. I would love to. Chair, members of the committee, we have some friends in the audience today who have come down on their spring break to watch how the legislature works. I heard a rumor that a friend had a Volkswagen literally today, and they hopped in and came down to Salem on a bet that they couldn't find me in the building. So Spencer, Nicholas, Carson, Avery, and Kyle, all neighbors of mine from the neighborhood, are seeing how the process works. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you. We're glad you're here. Gentlemen.
Good afternoon. Chair Reed, members of the House the Transportation Committee, Chair Bailey, members of the House Revenue Committee, for the record, Josh Lanner, Office of Economic Analysis. I'm here on behalf of the state economist, my boss, Mark McMullen. Unfortunately, he's unable to make it. It is right in the middle of spring break, and he is on vacation with the family for the first time in many years. And so I'm here on behalf of DAS and the Office of Economic Analysis. As you know, the Highway Cost Allocation Study is a study that is done once a biennium to determine sort of the apportionment factors, the proportionate shares for the different users of the highway, roads, and street systems, and then what the appropriate cost for each of those user groups would be, and then whether or not they're paying the appropriate cost. We go through two main RFP processes to get at these results, given that our small office does not have the expertise in all of these exact systems. We rely heavily on consultants and expertise in the transportation field. We go through one to choose the main consultant for the project, and the second one to choose the project manager that assists our office in that process. And that this for this biennium, that project manager was Tom Potowski from the Northwest Economic Research Council.
Center.
That's what NERC stands for. And I will turn it over to him for further information on the report.
All right, thank you, Josh. Good afternoon, Chair Reed, Chair Bailey of the committees. For the record, my name is Tom Potowski, and I'm director of the Northwest Economic Research Center located at Portland State University. Just briefly, I'm just going to take just a couple minutes. The process here is one that we want to make sure that this study is a nonpartisan, it's apolitical, and it really is a scientific type study. So one of our processes that we do, and to make sure that people are all involved in this, is that we help formulate the request for proposals that hires the consultant, and we also work with what's called the study review team to help select who the consultant will be. After that competitive process is done, as I said, we also help formulate this study review team in consultation with Mark McMullen, the state economist. And if you see the list of the people that are on the study review team, you'll see that this is a wide breadth of people from industry, from local government, from the Legislative Revenue Office, for example, and also engineers, because this tends to be rather technical type information. So it's a good, I think, representation, industry, government, and also experts to help with the study. Now, they are brought in to help with the study, but I have to emphasize that it is the consultant that has the final word on the outcome of the study. The SRT helps in terms of giving information, giving advice, but if it comes down to a decision point, either the consultant says, this is the way I think it should be, and that's the way they do it, or if the consultant is of the opinion that there are two competing methods of how to do it, then the state economist becomes sort of a steps in and then will decide which direction the consultant will take. So I think the process is very upfront, and I think it is a very sort of honest scientific approach to this question. And I think with that, I think we'd like to bring up some of the study review team members that can describe to you a little bit of the process that we go through.
Yes, please. Pleasure for me then to see one of my old college economics professors. Mr. Negri.
Representative Reed, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. Glad you're here.
Good to see you.
Who's first?
Heard you talking.
I'm Don Negri. I am a professor of economics at Willamette University across the street.
You can say
all right. Well, okay. Thanks. I am a member of the study review team. The study review team began to meet approximately monthly in April 2012. We participated in reviewing the proposals. We had input into all steps in the analysis and the issue papers. We reviewed the methodology and the results. We have actually one more meeting, I believe, on Wednesday. The contractor responded to all of our concerns and questions. The meetings were open, and as far as I'm concerned, the process had integrity, and the staff of the study review team and the contractor were all very professional.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committees. My name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I've been a member of the study review team for longer than I care to remember. Oregon has been doing cost allocation studies longer than any other state, and we do them more frequently. We do one every 2 years, and that's required under our Constitution, which was changed in 2000. Most states do them infrequently. The federal government does one generally every 10 years, although they're about 15 years since they did their last one. So we are very experienced at doing this, and we like to think that we have the best program going. Most of the study review team has served on that August body for a number of biennia, and we've overseen a number of studies. We would invite you to our study review team meetings, but most people don't find them particularly interesting, unless you're a transportation conehead like us.
Or Mr. Russell, or a revenue conehead, perhaps.
We enjoy the heck out of them, actually. We go through a sort of a process where we identify the issues that we want to study during that biennium, and there are issue papers that are drafted by the consultants that we review, and then we decide whether or not we think it's appropriate to make any changes to the study. In the last couple of biennia, the changes we've made have been relatively small. What we've really focused on is a new method of cost allocation that we will hear about later, that we call the efficient fee. It's a different way of looking at transportation costing and funding. It's kind of exciting. It's been kind of fun for us. One of the things that I think is real important and for you to know is that this works. Because we do it every 2 years, and then when we do a transportation funding package, MAZN uses the cost allocation study to actually calculate the tax rates that go into those funding packages, like the Jobs and Transportation Act or OTIA 3. Those were all calculated using this process. Then we do the next study, and if we're in balance, MAZN did it right. And we are very fortunate that we have been in balance for about a decade. So through the last two major funding packages, we continue to be in good shape. So I'd be happy, let me turn it over to Craig, and then we can stand for questions.
Chair Reed, Chair Bailey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here representing AAA. We're also a member of the team. And I do have to say that the consultant makes a really good use of that team, and that when they are doing research papers, they're bringing it before us for making sure it passes a smell test, making sure that they're addressing all the key issues that we want to make sure are addressed, because the cost allocation study, although it's unbelievably complex, it does wrestle with a lot of emerging policy areas around transportation, how you tax, what's the appropriate means of taxing, and things like that. And that gives us an opportunity to give kind of a real-world feel to what they're looking at so that they don't go too far off the beaten path. But at the same time, especially now that we're looking at the efficient fee method, which you'll hear about later, it gives us an opportunity to really evaluate whether or not what we're doing, though we've been doing it for a long time, is the right way to do it. And that's one of the reasons why the study review team was put together with such breadth. It really gives you a very rounded group of people to throw back evaluations on the issues that we deal with. One of the things that we hope occurs is that some of us who are... we've kind of inherited geekdom as opposed to started there. You get a little nervous when you're sitting through these meetings and suddenly everything is making sense, and that's some means of concern. But it also means that,
too.
Yes.
Pretty scary.
So it gives us an opportunity to be conversant so that when we're dealing with especially policymakers who don't have the tradition that these two committees do in dealing with taxation policy, that we can explain the kind of the details, the wizard behind the curtain. Thank you. If it were as you will, you know what I mean. Okay. You know, we've been doing this for a number of years, and we've gotten really good at it. And we're very fortunate to have a consultant who has not just some expertise, but the expertise in the field of cost allocation study. And the reason why that's so important is it allows Mr. Russell and I to sit side by side when we're testifying on taxation, because we know, having seen the study, that we are paying our fair share. And when the study says we're not, we know why we're not, and we're able to come before you and tell you how to fix it. And that becomes a long-term critical element to making sure that Oregon's transportation tax policy is well carried out. And with that, I'm sure we would be willing to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Representative McEwen was waving, not asking a question.
I would like to ask that,
please.
This is my fourth, I believe, study review team, and I started on this sometime in the 90s. The issues that face us, faced the study review team in this iteration, are different than it was 15, 20 years ago. We have more hybrid, more electric vehicles, and that's going to continue into the future. We have a greater recognition of the environment, of environmental externalities. We have a greater recognition of the risk to our road system associated with earthquakes. There's a change in significant change in technology that allows us to consider potentially other ways to fund our roads that would lead to more efficient use of our roads. And so I just wanted to mention that things are changing, and I would urge the state of Oregon to be proactive in dealing with the changes that are coming down the road.
Would anyone like to ask any of the obvious questions about Representative Benson? No, I know where you're going, I think.
I'm late in this question. I wanted to ask if your study was sufficiently refined to measure the damage done by skateboards, but I'm a little late. I'm sure that it is, of course. That's the right answer.
Yes. It is.
Only if they have studded wheels. Yes,
the question really is, after all this studying, how much of a change is there from this report and the last one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, about 1.5% is my recollection of the difference. The margin of error is plus or minus 5%, and in this particular study, trucks are overpaying by 1.25%. 2.5%, and that's up. Our overpayment is up a little bit from the last study, but I mean we're really, really close. And when you think of Mazin using it in 2009 to calculate the JTA rates, and we came back and we were within 1%, and now we're within 2.5%. It's really accurate.
So my follow-up is, who would know if you were right or wrong? And is the answer that it's the two of you that keep each other honest, or keep the, is that, what's the interior tension that makes sure that it's right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, certainly there is some interior tension, and not only does it keep things balanced, but it also keeps things lively.
Chair Bailey, Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, the other thing I'll comment is, even if the study is off 1% here or there, the time that we tend to rectify that, unless it really goes off, is every time we have a transportation funding package. That allows us to once again apply the results of the study to a tax structure, which then evens it up. And one thing that Mr. Malik is very good at doing is getting us to zero off when we're talking about a transportation funding package. And you may have remembered back in 2009, the discussions around if you increase the registration fee, what is the impact on the weight mile tax, et cetera, what do you have to do to truck registration fees, and that's all run through the process of the cost allocation study results to make sure that we're truing everything up. So whenever we do have one of those packages, once we get a percentage here, a percentage there, that evens it all up and essentially puts us back at a good starting point for the studies that follow.
Oh, go ahead. And so if someone chose to dispute what you've come up with, it would be hugely expensive, I'm guessing, to try to challenge any part of what you've done, or am I wrong? If someone was really upset about this, are you talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars to challenge the outcome?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, there is a sizable amount of money invested in the consultants when we do the study. There's no question about it. But one of the things that we've tried to do over the years is make the study more transparent. I mean, it is a study, but it is also a computer model. And we've worked really hard to document that model and to make sure that somebody could come along and take a look at it and say, yeah, that seems reasonable or that doesn't seem reasonable. So there's been a real effort to provide transparency. So if someone wanted to check what we were doing, I don't believe that it would cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And Chair Bailey, Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, the other thing about challenging the results of the study, the nice thing is it's very easy to narrow down to what inside the study may be of concern, because a lot of the debate we have is on very discrete issues about how do you allocate a cost to cars or trucks based upon a variety of factors. So the end result, you might say, well, that doesn't sound right. Well, you can narrow right down into whether or not you think the wrong data was used for the VMT for automobiles for the year, or whether or not it's because we decided to apply administrative costs to a vehicle mile of travel versus a some other factor that was similar but a little bit off. So it really would just mean you'd have to have somebody who knew how to look at the study and was comfortable enough with numbers to dig into it. But other than that, I doubt there would be anyone who would want to challenge the study as a whole, but discrete issues are pretty easy to do.
So I wonder, Professor Negri, if you could go a little further with your observation about the things that have changed, the things we should be proactive. Are there things, as we go through this session and future sessions, that this committee ought to be keeping in mind?
Well, there are more efficient ways to charge for the way we finance our roads. And the technology is advancing such that we may be able to, in the future, make charges, for example, for individuals who are using the roads at peak times, thus spreading out the congestion such that we don't have to build as many new roads. It's fairly complex. It has a lot of obstacles before one can get there. But this is a method worth considering because we can't, in the future, to the extent that we have more hybrid cars, more all-electric cars, we won't be able to finance our roads the way we currently do. So an open mind toward alternatives seems would behoove us.
That's helpful. And this committee, at least the Transportation Committee, has heard already some of the discussion around the road use charge concept. If we choose to advance that, the other half of the people sitting up here as part of the Revenue Committee will see it as well. So that's a good reference. Other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's like watching a play, isn't it? I don't know who's coming next.
Chair, I might comment that while you got to welcome your former professor before the committee, it's always a pleasure for me to see my former colleague and co-worker, Carl Batten, here. So.
That's very nice.
Biannual presentation.
Parade of friends today.
I was going to say welcome, Mr. Batten. Dr. Batten might be more appropriate. Dr. Batten, thank you.
Chair Reed, Chair Bailey, members of the committees, I'm Carl Batten from HECO Northwest. And the skateboarders did know the right time to leave.
Okay, let's go.
Like Mazin said, Oregon has been doing highway cost allocation longer than any other state. We started in 1937, and this is the 18th study so far. Since 1999, the state constitution has required a study every 2 years, and adjustment of rates if found necessary. And the constitutional requirement is that the shares of revenues paid by light and heavy vehicles are fair and proportionate to their share of costs. And this constitutional requirement applies only to the balance between light vehicles such as cars and heavy vehicles such as trucks. The highway cost allocation study goes beyond the simple question of light versus heavy and looks at a wide variety of weight classes in 2,000-pound increments. But the key constitutional question is the light versus heavy. You've met four of the study review team members so far. Mark McMullen is the chair. He's unavailable today. Jerry Bohard from the Oregon Department of Transportation is on the committee. We've got Miguel Figliozzi from Portland State, Chris Higgins from Oregon State, who's a bridge expert, and we had a lot of research on bridges this year. Mazen Malik, who you know, Timothy Morgan from AAA, Don Negri, who you met, John Oshel from the Association of Oregon Counties, Doug Perrow, who's an interested citizen and has had a wealth of useful contributions to us, and Bob Russell, who you met. So the main question is, do the various classes of highway users pay user fees in proportion to the costs they impose on the highway system? To do a highway cost allocation study and attempt to answer that question, the first step is to define user classes. We define classes by the weight of the vehicle. They could be defined in other ways as well. We look at everything under 10,000 pounds as a light vehicle, and then in 2,000-pound increments above that. The next step is to allocate the cost to the user classes. Then you attribute the revenues to the user classes, and you see how they compare. And the way we measure that is we take the share of revenue divided by the share of cost. And so that's a unitless measure, and if it equals 1.0, that means you have perfect equity. Each class is paying their appropriate share of revenue and the same share of cost. As someone mentioned earlier, because of the error that are inherent in any kind of measurement and the number of calculations that compound on top of each other in this study, we don't say it is out of balance unless it turns out to be off by more than 5%. So Oregon's approach to highway cost allocation, this is the traditional approach that Oregon's been doing for many years, is to define the costs as the budgeted expenditures over the upcoming biennium. We include the expenditures of federal funds because they're interchangeable with state funds. So for example, ODOT likes to spend federal funds on preservation of highways. But if they chose to spend those funds on modernization instead, then that would free up state funds to be spent on preservation. So they're fungible. And so we look at how all of them are spent rather than the ones from any particular source. We also include the expenditures by local governments of state revenues, like the state gas tax that goes over to the local governments. And we include expenditures by local governments of federal funds and some of their own source funds. The own source funds from the local governments that we exclude are the ones that are dedicated to a particular purpose. So if they have a levy that's to raise money for a particular bridge or something, and there's nothing else they can spend that on, we don't consider that to be interchangeable with state funds. But general fund revenues that they can spend on anything, we do consider to be interchangeable. And chapter 2 of the report describes the structure of our approach, and chapter 3 provides more of the numbers behind it. There were a couple of things that were new in the 2013 study. In the most recent few studies, we used bridge cost allocation factors that were developed in 2002. There's been a lot more bridge work done in Oregon since then, a lot of experience with more modern bridge designs and newer standards for building bridges. So we had HDR Engineering, which was closely involved in a lot of the bridge work in Oregon, do a new bridge cost allocation study, and they gave us new bridge cost allocation factors that we used to allocate the cost of bridges to different vehicle classes. We also eliminated what was called the alternative fee difference adjustment, or the subsidy adjustment. And what we're reporting now as the final result of the study is the straight equity ratio for full fee paying vehicles. We no longer look at the amount of difference between what subsidized vehicles would pay if they paid full fees and what they do pay, and then allocate that as if it were a cost. That's the way it was done in prior studies. We no longer do that. So the results, the equity ratio for light vehicles is 0.9871, and for heavy vehicles it's 1.0250. The heavy vehicles are always a little bit farther away from 1.0 than the light vehicles because there's fewer of them. So when a dollar moves from heavy vehicles to light vehicles, it becomes a smaller proportion of the total. And so looking at the light vehicle equity ratio of 0.9871, if we use the old bridge cost factors, it would be 0.9949, which is incredibly close to 1.
Excuse me just a second. We have a question. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. On the previous slide.
Let's see. Yes.
I want to be sure that I understand very clearly what this means. What all goes into costs as it appears on this slide?
What all goes into costs?
Mm-hmm. On this slide.
It's this, the definition of costs we use is the same on everything.
Okay.
So the budgeted expenditures of money from the highway fund plus the expenditure of federal funds that come through the highway fund plus the expenditures by local governments of state revenues, federal revenues, and own source revenues that are not dedicated to particular projects. And so that means that that light vehicles are spending 65.9% they get the costs associated with light vehicles are 65.9% of the total costs, and the revenues produced by light vehicles are 65.0%.
Go ahead, please.
It's still not clear to me. It sounds more like expenditures, not costs. For me, costs
you are correct.
Relate to relative damage to the road or relative impact on system congestion because of numbers of the vehicles taking up space on the road. Those are things that I think of as costs. What you listed were, I think, expenditures. Totally different concept for me to try to figure out what's fair and what's equity.
Yes, and I have a question for you. Were you here for the study 2 years ago? Were you on this committee?
Yes.
Okay, you probably don't remember, but there 2 years ago there were two studies. One was the traditional study, which is what we did again this time, and what was done in all the prior studies. The traditional study looks at expenditures and treats them as costs. The efficient fee study that we did 2 years ago was an attempt to come closer to what you're thinking, where we tried to imagine a world where every vehicle would pay fees that would vary with the time and place that they're traveling, as well as the characteristics of the vehicle and the characteristics of the road or bridge that they're traveling on.
Yes, and now I remember that one very well, because for that hearing, if I'm not mistaken, we were over in the Revenue Committee's hearing room.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I had 3 or 4 questions at that time. Yes, it's all coming back painfully. Okay.
So in the tradition of highway cost allocation, which began before I was born, it's been expenditures as the proxy for cost.
Chair Bailey, Representative Nathans, and you're completely correct. The definitions that we came to is costs is inclusive of a bigger universe. Expenditure represents some of that. However, with time, we're trying to approach that spanning of that universe, if you will. So this time around, as Professor Negri mentioned, that we're looking into different things, looking into the environmental costs, into congestion costs, and so on. So these are things that are not necessarily immediately definable in that sense, but we are expanding the study in order to approach them. So it is slightly approaching them over okay. time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
Okay, so I'll go back to the effects of the changes that we made to the 2013 study. Looking only at the light vehicles, our final result this time was 0.9871. If we had used the old bridge cost factors, we would be at 0.9949. If we had used the old subsidy adjustment, we'd be at 0.9810. And if we had done both, we would be at 0.9987. So the rates that Mr. Malik made for the Jobs and Transportation Act changes for the gas tax increase and the corresponding increases in the weight mile tax were based on the 2-year-old version of the model, which would have given us a 0.9987 this time. So he actually scored better than it looks.
Nice work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Like I said, it's the balance between light and heavy vehicles that the Constitution addresses, but we can also look at equity within the heavy vehicles. When we do that, we find that vehicles between 10,001 and 26,000 pounds are overpaying. We find that most vehicles between 26,001 and 78,000 pounds are underpaying. Vehicles between 78,001 and 80,000 pounds, this one particular 2,000 pound increment, are overpaying by quite a bit, 21%. And this one 2,000 pound class accounts for 41% of the heavy vehicle miles traveled. The reason this one class is accounts for such a large proportion of the miles and is shows up as relatively out of balance in this study is that for the trucks who don't know what they're going to weigh with their next trip or the subsequent trips throughout the year, they can declare their weight to be 80,000 pounds, and then they're good for whatever they need to haul throughout the year. So a lot of trucks do that. The trucks that don't know that they're definitely going to weigh less than 80,000 pounds tend to declare that their weight will be 80,000 pounds, and they pay that rate. Most vehicles over 80,000 pounds are underpaying, especially the very heaviest ones that pay the road use assessment fee. And the full details of every weight class are provided in Chapter 6 of the report. So the recommendations we have are that no changes to rates are necessary for light-heavy fairness and proportionality. We do provide some revenue-neutral changes that could be made to rate structures that would improve equity within the heavy vehicles. It's a flatter table A rates. They start off a little higher and end up a little lower than the current rates. Higher table B rates, which are the rates for trucks over 80,000 pounds and vary by both weight and the number of axles, and higher road use assessment fees. And in addition, you'll be hearing soon about some recommended changes to flat fee rates.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Byron? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, as Carl mentioned, we have the flat fee report. The flat fee is a subset of the studies that we do for the heavy vehicles. The flat fees are the trucks that pay on a flat fee rather than weight mile, and Dr. Ponte from ODOT will present the study for you.
Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Del Ponte.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, Chair Bailey, members of the committee. I am Greg Delponte. I'm the administrator for ODOT's Motor Carrier Transportation Division, and I'm here this afternoon to summarize for you the recently concluded flat fee study. You're familiar that Oregon's form of highway use tax for heavy trucks is a weight mile tax. It's a tax that is charged per mile, and it varies according to the 2,000-pound weight increment of the declared weight of the combination vehicle. But in addition to that, Oregon law also provides for the use of an annual flat fee in lieu of the weight mile tax for trucks carrying three different commodities: logs, sand and gravel, or wood chips. Oregon revised statute 825.482 directs the Department of Transportation and the Oregon Transportation Commission in each even-numbered year to conduct a flat fee study and to report to the Legislative Assembly in each odd-numbered year whether or not flat fee filers paid an equivalent amount of tax that they would have paid had they reported and paid on a mileage basis. And in making that assessment, we're not concerned about individual taxpayers. We're only concerned about the cumulative result. All log flat fee filers, all sand and gravel flat fee filers, et cetera, taken together. Did they report and pay under flat fee what they would have reported and paid had they reported under the traditional weight mile tax? To answer that question, we use a consultant. In this case, we used Dr. Catherine Lawson from the University of Albany in New York. And she has actually performed this study for us each year since 2002. The executive summary has been provided to you, and it indicates that flat fee filers hauling logs or sand and gravel have underpaid their equivalent weight mile tax liability. And chip filers, which I should clarify and tell you, there is one. There is one motor carrier hauling chips on flat fee, overpaid their equivalent weight mile tax. So based on that, the duty of the department is to recommend to you what flat fee rates would have resulted in revenue neutrality or parity. And those rates are just displayed on page 2 of my testimony. And that is about the size of it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other questions? It's another one of those hearings where we represent Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said there's one carrier on the flat rate. Does that mean there's other chip haulers that are paying weight and mile?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cameron, yes, sir, that's correct.
Thank you.
Motor carriers have the option of electing to pay on a weight mile tax or a flat fee if they happen to be hauling these eligible commodities.
And does that change a lot? Do people switch, or do haulers switch from one to the other?
Mr. Chairman, by and large, a motor carrier that has got a sufficient amount of business acumen recognizes that a flat fee is really an average, and it's based on a certain number of miles. And so if you have the ability to project with some degree of certainty how many miles you're going to operate in the coming year, you can then make a comparison, which represents a better deal for the company, to report and pay on miles or to report and pay on flat fees. Some other carriers make that kind of calculation, and that's why we have to come here and adjust this on occasion. Other motor carriers are doing it purely for the convenience. And some years they are a winner, some years they're a loser. But to them, the value of the convenience is what drives the decision.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And finally, Chair Reed, Chair Bailey, we have a quick report on the revenues coming from the Job and Transportation Act of 2009 session, or the House Bill 2001, and that's Les Crowley from ODOT.
Thank you.
And as you heard, that we had the target right between the heavy and light. Maybe we didn't hit the amount in the middle of the recession exactly as it should, as you would see.
A little preview then.
Thank you.
A little preview, yes. Good afternoon, Chair Reed, Chairman Bailey, members of the Joint Committee. For the record, Lesbury, Chief Financial Officer, Oregon Department of Transportation. We have summarized the Jobs and Transportation Act revenue, which you have in front of you. In 2009, the legislature passed the multimodal funding package for the Jobs and Transportation Act. JTA provided revenue through three increases, three areas, through registration, title fees, weight and mile increase, and 6 cent increase in terms of the fuels tax. As a background, JTA's revenue for the state and ODOT, they share half of that with the counties and the cities. The counties receive 30% and the cities receive 20%. JTA supports $840 million worth in terms of authorization for JTA projects. JTA's revenue, as Manzan was referring to, was estimated to provide $300 million for FY 2012. FY 2012 was the first year of full implementation. The revenue collected in 2012 was $273 million, or approximately 9% less than anticipated. The most recent forecast projects $269 million for an approximate 12% lower than anticipated for the FY 2013 period. Despite the revenue shortfall, ODOT plans to deliver on the JTA projects required by statutes by moving funds from other programs. ODOT is required, of course, to quarterly provide updates in terms of the estimates for the quarter that just passed and for the projected revenue in terms of the current quarter. This completes our update and our summary.
That's very quick.
Mr. Chair, you have these reports on all us, of course, that you have them in front of you in case you're interested in more precise numbers.
Thank you. I'm just looking at it, trying to catch it. Any questions on the Jobs and Transportation Act? Let's see. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you for your indulgence and your support of this study has been vital in keeping this equity clause of the Constitution working very well. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the context, and some of us will probably see you again next time.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Bailey, anything from the revenue side?
Any other questions from the Revenue Committee? Okay.
Representative Conger, you're down here. Although the good news for you is we're just completing the portion of the hearing that has to do with the Revenue Committee. Unless there's anything else for the good of the Revenue Committee, we'll close the informational meeting on the highway cost allocation study. And Representative Bailey.
House Committee on Revenue is adjourned.
Well. We'll stand. Just out of curiosity, is it me?
It's nothing you said,
yes.
Representative Conger.
It is.
The Transportation Economic Development Committee will stand at ease for a moment while the Revenue Committee departs.
And this is when we get Representative Conger's private session.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Transportation Economic Development Committee will come back to order, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2345. Troy, do you want to give us a reminder of that bill, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2345 establishes West Coast Critical Infrastructure Exchange Task Force consisting of 10 members, two appointees from the Oregon Senate, two appointees from the Oregon House of Representatives, four appointees from the Governor, one appointee from the Oregon Business Development Department, one appointee from the State Treasurer. Directs Task Force to make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly regarding assessing the status of existing infrastructures and to develop and implement critical infrastructure projects, including but not limited to projects involving energy transmission and efficiency, water storage capacity, municipal water systems, and wastewater management. Requires the State Treasurer to provide staff support to the task force. Sunsets task force on June 30th, 2015, declares emergency effective on passage. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we are in possession of the Dash 3 amendments. We are also in possession of a letter from the Speaker of the House rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means due to the Dash 3 amendments. We are also in possession of the Dash 3 fiscal impact statement and revenue impact statement.
Thank you. So, committee, you'll remember on February 27th, we had a hearing that included Sarah Clark from Partnerships BC, talked a lot about some of the work for the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. The Dash 3 amendments, about time to talk, and there are two people here who can speak more expertly, I think are intended basically for us to commence a process to understand what the state needs to do to be ready to fully participate in the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange as it goes forward. And you can read very well the amendments detailing the need to assess what kinds of projects in Oregon might be appropriate, what authorities need to be developed and delegated, all that sort of stuff. So that's the basic kind of overview of those amendments. Ms. Williams and Mr. Salvaggio, there you are. If you could help us understand the amendments as well, I think we'd be better for it.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Karen Williams of Carroll Community Development in Portland, and serving as an advisor to the governor and the treasurer's team that was put together to consider innovative infrastructure for Oregon. The amendments to the bill, first, a little review and supplement Chair Reed's comments. The West Coast Infrastructure Exchange is a collaboration among Oregon, Washington, California, and with some support from British Columbia to establish the West Coast as a marketplace for innovative infrastructure by establishing common business best practices, a data platform of information about projects, and opportunities for collaboration on projects that are of interest to more than one of those jurisdictions. Part of the best practices undertaking is to establish an Oregon Center of Expertise, similar to that which you heard about from Sarah Clark, that has been so successful in British Columbia. The purpose of these amendments is to amplify on the language in the original bill to help assure that we have a robust conversation to bring back to the legislature a proposal that includes the input from all stakeholders about how these plans and programs might best be implemented in Oregon, and to recommend a system of governance and also a process for assuring that the high order public policy goals and community impacts of well thought out infrastructure projects can be preserved even using an alternate and innovative procurement method. Thank you.
And Mr. Salvaggio, we obviously, in these amendments, charged the Treasurer's Office with being pretty involved. It would be great if you could comment on that, please.
Certainly. For the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer, and I come bearing our enthusiastic endorsement of the Dash 3 amendments. And as we are currently involved in the functioning of the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange currently, I believe that the work described, the assistance described in this bill is accurately reflected in the fiscal impact statement that the committee should have already. So this is something that we generally have set up using Rockefeller Foundation money. I believe Ms. Williams described the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange adequately, and the establishment of this task force, I think, should be a good way to make sure the state's input actually flows to the exchange and vice versa. So with that, good amendments should be engrossed.
Thank you, Mr. Salaja. Other questions? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking for the fiscal statement for the amendments.
We have those. Where I'm looking at it is in OLIS. And
I can do it again.
Okay. Troy, I've got a hard copy for you.
So it's not underneath?
I think I had it, and I can get back to it. Stand by a second here. I haven't figured out how to keep them all in the...
I don't know why they don't put them in the right spot.
Tabs, exactly. They should just be where we want them.
Fiscal impact statement.
So if I click under the 2345, under our agenda, right at the top there are proposed amendments, and then below that there's a fiscal impact statement.
Mr. Chair, I want to just point this out. If the public is looking at this right now, they can't see this fiscal impact statement, I don't believe.
It's in all
the public, only if you're logged in.
I'm not. I hope that's not true, Troy.
I need a lesson on Orlis, because I'm underneath House Bill 2345 right now looking at the analysis, and I click on fiscal impact statement. The only one that I see is for the bill as it is introduced.
Hmm. We'll confirm that, Mr. Chairman, and follow up.
Let's let's stand at ease for a moment and make sure we get that distributed. We'll stand at ease for just a moment.
I'm seeing one for a dash three.
Are you?
Yeah. I am too. Yeah.
I'm just looking
depends
at
on
today,
how you, it depends
today.
On how
committee will come back to order. Representative Cameron, thank you for your patience. Hopefully, we've got you to the right place now. Do you have what you need?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and there's still a problem with one section on the OLIS. I found it, but where they show up under analysis, the original fiscal impact is there, but not the dash threes yet. So there's a programming issue with OLIS that some people may be easily confused by, as I was.
I appreciate that.
We probably need to work on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So with the amendment and with the fiscal impact, I think I can characterize this as essentially a on track to answering the questions about how the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange would work and how Oregon would involve itself. And we're back to that spot. Is there discussion or questions about the amendment? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think a question for Michael. If this happens and we end up with the task force, share with us, if you would, how you would see, looking forward, what the task force might decide to do when it comes to interacting with state agencies. Let's use an example, the Columbia River Crossing. If this task force had been in place, how would you anticipate it would have or will suggest? I know this is anticipatory of what the task force is going to be doing, but how would you see it interact in that kind of a project?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for loading up that question.
I don't know why that came to me, Michael.
So the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange is an established collaboration between several states in British Columbia already. And this task force would basically be a way for Oregon to clarify its role, its expectations in that process, basically how that plugs in. So with regard to a purely hypothetical interstate project, the presumably, and I want to make clear that this is prospective, so at this point, this is my best guess, and the committee and task force and exchange could, within their various sideboards, decide to operate otherwise. But ideally, the task force would convey Oregon's expectations and concerns and responsibilities, et cetera, and basically send that information to the task force, which would then also judge, weigh, et cetera, the same information from another state, say California. And in doing that would presumably collaborate on standardization of debt issues. There's a few other, I have these little talking points here, and if you'll forgive me, I'm not the point person on this, but collaborate on standardization, delivery methods, various efficiencies that could save money if coordinated between states, such as instead of two states each issuing their own bond, if we standardize terms and then issue a single bond, then both states are able to save on issuance costs. And that's just an example. But basically, this task force allows Oregon to put its foot forward and then a partner state to put their foot forward and then coordinate that at the exchange level.
And Representative Metz, we might ask Ms. Williams to comment too, if you're okay with that.
Please.
My pleasure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, the committee. I think this expression of the task force's role to identify and define Oregon's participation, manner and method of participation in the West Coast Exchange and what Oregon expects to get out of that collaborative forum is well expressed. Thank you. I think at this moment in time, to say what the outcome would be on a particular project is a difficult conclusion to come to. As we saw in the Multnomah County Courthouse project, the steps for evaluating a particular project involve a screening report, a business case analysis, and a recommendation about what is the optimum procurement methodology for any undertaking. So the task force is really looking at three different things. One is the West Coast Exchange, which is the collaborative forum. Another is the entities similar to Partnerships BC that would work on Oregon projects and contribute analysis, best practices, and ideas through the exchange to the other jurisdictions. And the third is a data platform that is information about all of these projects. So I hope that's helpful, Representative Vance.
Oh, please. Actually, I wasn't asking so much for the outcome as I was where the thing fits. In other words, if ODOT is managing a large project, or if anybody has managed a large project, how does this organization mesh or interface with whoever it is that wants to do something? Where is it? Is it someone that stands by to receive a telephone call, or is it an entity that it has been involved in creating a new set of tools available that anybody might access, or is it an entity that is designed to be a step through which other agencies must pass to get to where they want to go? That's what I'm really asking.
I guess the answer, yes, probably isn't.
May I take a first stab at that?
Please.
Representative, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe the easiest and coincidentally most accurate answer to that question is that this task force is set up, I think, mostly to decide exactly how that plug-in will work. Whether we envision that as something that all agencies must pass through, whether we envision that as a partnership of the Treasury, which sells bonds, or DAS, which schedules bonds. These are all fantastic questions for this task force to begin working on.
Thank you.
Very good. Any questions? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've removed the referral to Ways and Means on this, correct?
Yes.
So since it's not going to go to Ways and Means, I have a few Ways and Means questions, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
The original fiscal impact statement stated that both DAS and State Treasurer may have to come back to the Emergency Board for future funding. And I'm wondering what in the bill has changed that would cause that not to happen.
Do you want to go first?
I'm sorry, I didn't contribute.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I also did not contribute to our department's fiscal impact statement, but I will flip through and look for some buzz phrases that often come into play very quickly here.
While I was doing that, Representative Cameron, I couldn't give you a specific thing that has changed to change that aspect of it, but as I read it, a fairly straightforward request to come back with recommendations, I don't think necessarily I doubt that it's going to trigger a requirement for an additional position or that sort of thing. So
a follow-up, if I may.
Please.
So in the new fiscal statement, the last line, State Treasurer and DAS may need to return to Emergency Board and Legislative Assembly to seek position authority for additional staff in the event that there's comments here about...
You were reading from the original, is that right?
Dash 3 fiscal statement, bottom line. And there is someplace else in here where it said...
I don't see the return to ask for additional staff.
To fiscal impact statement, House Bill 2345-3, staff just handed it to me.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom paragraph. However, if expenses and travel staffing requirements exceed expectations, do we know what those expectations are?
It's different.
At this time, the bill...
prioritize duties and responsibilities of existing staff.
That sentence is not in this one. That's why we're having trouble. Interesting.
Well, follow up, if I may, then. Nice. We have conflicting fiscal statements that say
he has an additional sentence in his hard copy that isn't in this electronic.
So we probably need to get that straightened out.
Yes,
so
we do.
Do we know what the dollars amounts by the state treasurer that are expected? Because there's a line in here that says, obviously, maybe we're going to remove that line so we don't have any expectations of expenditures. Does the department know what their expectations are of how much they'll spend for this particular task force? Two departments, DAS and the treasurer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have particular numbers. I can tell you that the Rockefeller Foundation has supplied to this point $750,000 in grants to finance the our work regarding the infrastructure exchange and associated work through the end of 2013. I believe that we have received expenditure authority on that money. Have worked that into our current budget. So we will expect to just absorb this work into our current budget, and then our budgeted budget for the next biennium.
At this point, I'm prepared to say we have a sufficient issue with the fiscal impact statement being inconsistent in the hard copy and the electronic copy that I'm not comfortable going forward. I think I am comfortable with the intent, but I want to get sure. I want to get straight what's going on between the statements here. So let's use the remaining time to uncover any other issues, and then hopefully we can carry this agenda item over to Wednesday, and hopefully by then we'll have it straight and we can move it out. Any other questions while we're over here at the moment? Okay, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just, again, trying to wrap my head around, and I may not be the only committee member, exactly what the task force will do. And I appreciate the three sort of points that you raised. I heard them, and correct me if I'm wrong. One would be to identify urgent infrastructure needs in the state of Oregon and within the context of the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. There are two other pieces that I see in the amendments that I'd like some clarification on. The first is there's a discussion of a center of expertise and creation, possible recommendations for creation of a public or private corporation. Could you go into depth on that? And then second is the creation of a database or electronic resource for infrastructure projects. Could you go into depth on that? Sorry for all the questions mixed into one.
Good questions, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, members of the committee, the task force is intended to define those and make recommendations to the legislature of those three business components. First is Oregon's role and participation in the West Coast Exchange, and Oregon's expectations of the benefits to be received from that participation. The second is to follow the recommended best practices for doing innovative infrastructure financing, public-private partnerships, though that term is so broad that it has very little helpful meaning. But the best discussion of financing innovative infrastructure for Oregon is to use a methodology similar to that employed by Partnerships BC. The recommended best practice for that is to create a center of expertise that has the multidisciplinary skills to do that work well across public entities within the jurisdiction, whether it's state agencies, local governments, counties, or groups of them working together on infrastructure. And as was mentioned, the funds from the Rockefeller grant have been used in part to help develop an information base software and data sharing to help projects be defined in their level of readiness, and also to share cross information about various types of projects, both among state government, the municipalities, project sponsors, potential funders, and contractors. And so the task force under the amendments is to look at all three areas: Oregon's participation in the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange, a recommendation about the advisability and, if advisable, the structure and responsibilities of an Oregon Center of Expertise, and the utilization and utility of that information-based platform if it is of utility to Oregon.
Follow up,
please.
Thank you, Chair. And could you talk about the different roles that existing agencies and departments of the state are going to take in the task force? So we've heard from Treasury. Obviously, we've got a $2.5 billion a year agency in the Department of Transportation. What's their role going to be? They've got 100 years of practice in this sort of thing. I know we're trying to make it more efficient, better. How are we leveraging existing resources, I guess, is my question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis and the committee, to the best extent possible, the membership of the task force is, the categories are broad enough to invite participation in the task force, either as task force members or as technical advisors to the task force, to bring to bear not only stakeholder interests, but also the best expertise that we have.
Questions? Troy, you've uncovered some of the, perhaps the
mystery?
Reason for the, yes, the mystery.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Representative Cameron, the difference between the hard copy that you have in your possession that I provided you, I obtained that around probably 2:15 this afternoon when I walked down to the Legislative Fiscal Office to encourage them to post the fiscal as soon as possible, because it had not been posted by 2:15. So she gave me a hard copy of this so I could use that with the Speaker's office to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So during the hour between 2:15 and 3:15 when they posted it, they must have revised the language. So as what you're seeing is a copy that's probably an hour older than what's been posted.
That's helpful. I don't know that it solves our issue for today necessarily, but I would like to have some offline conversation, make sure that we're all okay before we move forward. Representative Cameron, is that helpful for you?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
No problem.
Other questions?
Thanks for the explanation, too.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. We will carry the work session over to Wednesday and hopefully be back at that point having smoothed out all the details. That completes our agenda for today, so I'll close the work session on House Bill 2345, noting again that we're carrying it over for Wednesday. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? Didn't see any. And we're adjourned.
I made